As Frank mentioned, we're coming up on our anniversary. 7 years on May 20th, so that's Tuesday. So in just a couple of days, we'll be 7 years old. And been thinking about that. It's been kind of interesting, just creeping up, you know, kind of year by year. Don't really think about it. Our first year, we had a big first anniversary bash. We were still down at Dana Point Harbor at that time. And since then, we really haven't made a whole lot out of our anniversaries. But seven, I thought, was time to just at least take a step back and take a look at things. We've got so many new people who haven't been around for our history. So I thought it might be good to just kind of go through a little bit of the story and what we stand for and what we're all about as we take stock of anniversaries. I was even thinking that anniversaries are interesting things just in and of themselves, because when you think about it, does time really care? I mean, we put these arbitrary lines, and we put these subdivisions, and we break time up into all these neat little chunks for our convenience. But when it really comes down to it, time is time. It just flows. There's no seams. There's no edges. When Mary and I were first married, this is going to be one of those stories that you're going to think, Dave, where did you come up with this? But see if it comes around. If it's not, just zone out for a little while and come back later. When Marion and I were first married, we lived in Irvine, right next to a nature preserve. And there was a colony of turkey vultures. Now, I don't know if you know what a turkey vulture is, but a turkey vulture is that thing you see circling up in the sky that looks like a hawk, and some people think it's a hawk, but really it's not. It's just a vulture. It's a carrion eater. And if you get up close enough to them, they got the black feathers and the red featherless head, real ugly-looking thing. But there was a whole colony of them that would roost in the towering eucalyptus that were all around our apartment complex that was right on the edge of this preserve. And I was fascinated by these birds. I just loved the fact that they were there. The neighbors hated it because, you know, they eat their stuff whole and then they just throw up all the things on the sidewalk and along with the other stuff that comes out the other end. Where is this going again, Dave? I don't know. But I love those guys. I love those guys. And the thing that was interesting to me about them is that they kept regular office hours. They were so good about that. Every morning the sun would come up, and as soon as there was enough heat for the thermals to rise, they would take off from those treetops, and they would go, and they'd circle, and they'd rise, and they'd look for their dead things to eat. And then in the evening when the sun was going down and was cooling off, they'd come back, and they'd re-roost. And the saddest thing was on a rainy day, watching those poor birds just hunched over like this, thinking, we're not going anywhere today. We got to sit in the rain all day long. But what I was thinking about it is, I'm doing my office hours at that time. My office hours, Monday through Friday, and my hours, and then I have my weekends off. But to a turkey vulture, there is no such division. The sun is up, the sun is down. The thermals are rising, and it's time to go soar, or there's no sun, there's rain today, and we just sit hunched over in the treetops. But just day after day, sunrise, sunset, sunrise, sunset. And I just was thinking how interesting that is, how we process time so differently than the animal kingdom. We process time so differently than our children do, who have no sense of that time. And here we make all these little lines. But you know what? Does that mean that there's no value in it? I think it's good for us to hold both things at the same time, to realize that time is this fluid thing that our lives are made of, that just kind of rolls on. But at the same time, it's so beautiful and so human to mark the passage of time, to remember things, to mark where we've been, to mark the promises that we've made, to mark the beginnings that we've made, and to celebrate how long we've been in relationship. These things are beautiful. These things are human. These things are things that we need to do as long as we keep this balance in mind. Here we've been going for 7 years. And seven is a special number. Most of you know, if you've been especially been hanging around here, you know that numbers mean something to the ancient Hebrews and the ancient Eastern world at large. But seven is a number of spiritual perfection. It's understood as one more than six. Six is the number of all of the directions that you can go in regular time and space, right? You can go forward and backward and side to side and up and down. Six, one more than that, was understood as spiritual perfection. That's why six was also understood as incompletion or imperfection. It was also a number for man because it was a number right before seven. And, of course, the number right after seven, eight, was a number of rebirth. And so these number systems and these symbolisms are carried throughout our scripture. So here we are with a number 7. What am I supposed to do with that? You know, I don't want to get over-spiritualized here, and I don't want to get symbolic, but there is a sense of symmetry and a sense of coming full circle to say that we've been doing something for 7 years. And so what I thought would be good is just go back and tell the story a little bit. 12 years ago, I was ordained. I was staffed at a church up a little bit north of here, and after 3 years realized that the rift between me and the staff was growing in terms of what I understood the gospel to be and how I was teaching it in my sessions. And so Marion and I resigned and stepped down. And there was a 2-year period where we were kind of out in the wilderness a little bit there, trying to figure out what was happening next, what was going on. Whenever you have that kind of camp forming in a church or in an organization, which is what I was really trying to avoid, but it's inevitable. There was a group of people that wanted to start a church right away. And honestly, I didn't know why we would be doing it. I remember thinking, is this just about my ego? Is this just because we want our own expression? What is the reason for us to exist? And I couldn't come up with one. And so, therefore, I just stopped. The band that is still up here playing, for the most part, was still together. We were the worship team at that church. The band kind of stayed together and moved along. We played at different churches around the area, and we're filling in. And one church in particular had us on a semi-regular basis. But something else was going on that was holding this together and keeping this thread going. While I was still associate pastor, I was also worship leader. And so I would go to a pro audio shop up in Costa Mesa to get our whatever it was we needed, from microphones to cables, whatever. There was a guy behind the counter there that always was helping me when I'd go. And his name was Grendel. And we would just do our transactions for months and probably over a year. And then one time I was in there and he said, hey, you know what? We got to talking. I'm a guitar player. Oh, I'm a guitar player too. Oh, I'm a worship leader. Really? I'm a worship leader too. Well, where do you play? Where do you play? And we just started getting to know each other. Next time I come in, he says, hey, why don't you come hear us play? We play Tuesday nights at Capo Beach Calvary at the bridge service right down there, which is for recovering addicts and alcoholics. To this day, I have no idea why I said yes. Because people always want you to come hear them play. And for the most part, it's not such a good experience. So I normally say no politely, just can't do it, not enough time, whatever. I don't know why. Maybe it was because of my relationship with Grendel. Something caused me to say yes. I have no addiction background myself. At that time, I'd never worked in addiction, never thought of addiction. It was nowhere on my radar screen. But I walk into this room at Capo Beach Calvary, and there is Lisa singing, our Lisa, our worship leader now, and Grendel playing acoustic guitar. And, of course, they are both just excellent. Grendel is a wonderful acoustic guitar player, and, of course, you all know Lisa. And so I'm really impressed with what they do. But I just listened to the music, and I left. And the next time I was in the shop, he said, hey, why don't you come sit in with us? And once again, I don't have any idea why I said yes. I had plenty of stuff to do, but I did. And went and sat in with them, and it was a great experience. And then, of course, they asked me to stay on and continue to play with them, which I did. And that marked the beginning of 5 years, I think, playing at the bridge at Capo Beach Calvary. And the band started to grow. Joe came in and started playing electric guitar. Dave came in and started playing drums with us. The band kind of grew around that nucleus. And then it became the worship band at the church I was at. And when we left, we stayed together. So all of these things were threading through. Lisa's husband at the time, Jeff Jones, was called on to become the leader of that particular group. And then he asked me to start teaching the 12 steps from a New Testament point of view, which means I actually had to learn the 12 steps. But something was happening to me in this process. When I walked in and finally started to pay attention to what was going on in the room, I realized that there was something there that I desperately wanted. It was more church than church to me. The experience that I was looking for in the community church, and I was not finding the realness, the authenticity, the rawness, the sense that everybody knows why you're there when you walk into a recovery gathering. There's no trying to appear perfect or no attempt to put any kind of airs on. Across the parking lot, if you're there, we know you're an addict. We know you're an alcoholic. And so there was this sense that faith was a life and death proposition. It really was something on the tip of everyone's tongues. There was the admission that something was needed. And I loved that. And I fell in love with the recovery community. even as I approached it as from the normie side, which I found absolutely laughable, you know, me, normie. Because what I started to realize, of course, is that everyone is recovering from something. And because I didn't pick up drink or drug, I had other things that I was processing that filled the exact same function in my life. To mask over the unfinished business, to mask over the fears, to get me through another 24 hours with a sense that I'm somehow okay whistling past the graveyard. And so we went on that way. And at that point, a few years later, the senior pastor at that church stepped down, creating kind of a political upheaval, as you would expect in that situation. And we increasingly found ourselves on the outside looking in. Jeff made the decision, since he was the director and had the track record at the church, that it was time to pull the plug and go out on our own. By that time, we'd met another man, Bubba, some of you know, Robert Beecham, who is the third co-founder of The Effect. And at that time, we decided, okay, it's time to take this out. What are we going to do? We had a vision of what we wanted to accomplish at that time, and it was an all-encompassing one, and it was way too ambitious for where we were at that point in our journey. We wanted someplace, a campus-like setting was the idea, and Jeff had a rendering drawn up, and it was all in mission architecture and all this great stuff of what this thing would look like. And he carried around with him everywhere this painting or this print. He had it in the back seat of his car, and he'd walk in with it under his arm, and he was only too quick to show everybody, this is what it's going to look like. This is the vision. And it was going to have sober living. It was going to have treatment. It was going to have the faith community. It was going to have all of these things in one setting. And Bubba, who had some resources, is the one who was helping us look. We were looking for space all around this Tri-County area, trying to find, Tri-City area, I should say, trying to find a space that would accommodate that. Some of the places we looked at now seem laughable to me, like the Algodon Motel, if anybody you know about that one. But we were looking for these things, and it became obvious, two things became obvious to us. First of all, we are not going to be able to find a property that really fit the bill to be able to do all that, especially the residential part, people actually living on site. Secondly, we realized the bar was set so high for being able to do detox and residential care and everything that we realized we were out of our depth and out of our league. Thank God we had that discernment at that time. So we backed way off. Bubba's family had connections at Dana Point Harbor, so we were able to get the boathouse, and if any of you know the boathouse at Dana Point, right next to the little protected beach on the youth dock, there's a little building at the end of it that is literally a boathouse. It's a two-car garage for boats, big sliding doors that go up about 20 feet so you can get the boats in, and that's where we met on Sunday mornings, and the first Sunday morning was May 20th, 2007. And I remember sitting there for my first message, which went way too long, I admit right now. But the first thing I said is, you know, we really need another church in Orange County like we need another Starbucks. And that was the truth. But we had had a planning meeting before that where we looked at what was our reason for existing. It wasn't just to put another community church on another corner in Orange County, because we have enough of those. Plus, we can never really be that, given that we had a reason to exist for the recovery community. We saw ourselves as a recovery ministry that also worshiped on Sundays. Steve, one of our new board members, has a great way of putting it. At this point, we have 22 meetings or so a week, one of which is Sunday morning. I love that, because it puts in balance and perspective what we're about. Most community churches exist for Sunday morning. That is the premier time when the connection happens. For us, it's happening all during the week. And we sat down and we tried to dedicate ourselves to certain principles. And I remember telling everybody, we don't want to be like all the other churches because we have a specific mission. But if we don't rededicate ourselves to those principles every single day, we're going to lose them. And we will morph into something that we don't recognize. And so we dedicated ourselves to that. Trouble is, we only had the boathouse on Sunday morning, and then we had their main room on Tuesday nights. So the Tuesday night that we were doing at CBC just got ported over to what we were doing. And so we needed some space where we could stretch out 7 days a week. That came a year and a half later. In October of 2008, we got this room here. And this had been a church before. When we walked in here, though, it had been a church, and then it was something else with a bunch of cubicles and all that cube farm thing going on in this room here. So we looked at it and we realized, okay, this could work. It still had the high ceilings, and they were already blacked out, so that was pretty nice. We got the lease, and we started building, and we had a couple of guys that were so instrumental, guys in early recovery, Josh Davis and Matt Pack, and a few others that built this stage, and eventually we built this wall, had to build out the room in the back for the kids' room that has gone through about four different iterations trying to find something that worked there, and it was just that great time when you get... When you get a new space, you know how exciting it is? A new house, a new space, and there's lots of energy, and we were putting it together and trying to make it a home. But the most important thing is it allowed us to have 7 days a week, a presence 7 days a week. And that allowed us to start building our AA meetings, our 12-step meetings. It allowed us to have other activities and workshops during the week. And we started to grow in that way. We wanted to grow further about a year and a half later, so we took a suite across the alley, and we put in a store. We had a recovery store. There's no place here to get just the chips and the needs for AA-type meetings, and so we put a whole gift store and a store for AA needs in the front, and in the back was the beginning of a treatment center, and we took a stab at that for about a year. And everything failed. We didn't do so good with the retail, and the treatment center just never really took off. We closed it back down again. And then a year and a half after that, about 3 years ago, we were really ready to do the treatment center right. By that time, Nina Dreyer over here was in a different position, and so she was able to come on board with us and really throw in full. That's what we needed. That was a missing piece for us. We took the suite right above, Suite 924, and we started Encompass Recovery, which is a day treatment and intensive outpatient program. And that has been going for the last 3 years. We expanded one more suite over, took Suite 923. They even let us cut a hole in the wall so that we have flow through the two suites. And so we have that piece now on top of what's going on. The effect, for those of you who just come on Sunday morning, it looks like church. But what's going on here is about 14 12-step meetings per week, full counseling center, outpatient treatment, day treatment upstairs. We have a sober house that is attached to what we do, so people have a place to live off-site. And then everything that's going on here in the faith community as well. We still have Tuesday nights going, Sunday mornings, we have our soaks. So there's a vibrant community. The idea was to create that place where people could come, not only with substance abuse addiction problems, but also everything else that goes on that keeps us from that full life. That is what the effect is all about. And now as we look forward, we have a vision that's going to take us full circle, we hope. We are probably, we keep saying this, I think for 6 months we've been saying we're 2 or 3 weeks away from finally getting past the fire authority so we can get our fire clearance so that we can put the application into the state to be able to do detox and residential care. But we really mean it this time, right, Nina? We're probably 2 or 3 weeks away from getting the fire clearance. Another round of permits for the city. It's just been a nightmare. But as soon as we get that fire clearance, we can put the application into the state that will allow us, hopefully by the fall, to be able to be doing detox and residential care. And that will necessitate probably a tenfold increase in everything that we have to do logistically, administratively. We'll have at least 5 to 7 shifts that we'll have to be covering 24/7 in 1 or 2 houses. And we'll need meals, and we'll need a van. So there's just a whole load of things as we move from day treatment to detox. But what will happen is we'll be able to expand outwards to the very beginnings and the very end of the treatment continuum for people who are suffering from addiction and alcoholism. By adding on detox and residential care, we have the very front end. With day treatment and outpatient, we have the middle and the counseling. And then the third thing that we'll be adding is what we're now calling, for lack of a better title right now, our mainstreaming program, which will include life planning and life skills, and Ryan and Tina are involved in that, getting people ready to be able to transition back into their lives. Whether they've come through our program or whether they're coming off the street, it doesn't matter. One of the hardest things for someone in recovery to do is to be able to get a job and become self-sustaining, to be able to take care of their family or take care of themselves. So everything that is needed to do that, if it's life skills, if they just need to know how to hold a knife and fork, if they need clothes for an interview, if they need to know how to take an interview, if they need help with finances, how to balance a checkbook, if they need to just think about what might I be good at. That's what Tina does as a life coach. She helps them to plan, give them personality tests. What are you wired for? How does that look? That huge piece. And then beyond that, we want to help the families. So Nina and Marion have a family weekend planned where families can come in, kind of retreat style, from Friday night to Sunday noon, where they would spend a weekend with us, maybe staying at the motel over here, and get everything that they need to know, all the resources that they need, to be able to move their family through the crisis of addiction that is happening in their midst. All of these things together will bring us full circle, all the way around to that rolled up print that Jeff Jones used to carry around with him. Everything is now on the cusp of being put in place that we were just dreaming about 7 years ago. But with the hope and the promise that we actually do have the experience now and the resources now and the people now to make it happen. And of course, if we're really going to do this, then we're probably going to need new space. And that's the next thing that we're taking a look at, is the possibility of being able to move where we can get a main room here that can hold up to maybe 200, multiple meeting rooms for AA meetings. The counseling center right across the street here is getting edged out. They have 30-plus meetings a week. We've got 14. To be able to merge those together and have a vibrant center for the recovery community where there's 40-plus meetings. If we had additional classrooms, then on Sunday morning we can have more space for our children where we can break them down. We only have one room right now. Break them down into age-appropriate groups where maybe families with smaller children who like what's going on here in the FEC but have no place for their kids might be able to hang with us for a longer period of time. To expand our faith community beyond the child and youth services and into what we're calling our media group, to be able to create materials for the message that we have here in different media, print and audio and video, and see if we can get it out. We're even working with Randy over here to get T-shirts made. He has a great idea for wisdom wear, or T-shirts with sayings that are, don't you love that, wisdom wear? I love that. Sayings that encompass the message here at the effect that people could wear either on shirts or caps. We don't know. We're just shotgunning here. But the idea is that this is the vision. This is where we would like to go. And we are so grateful to every one of you, all the people past and present who have made this journey possible and are continuing to make it possible and are helping us as we move into the future with whatever is going to happen here, however this is going to work. But there have been so many lessons along the way, and I think I wanted to take the last few minutes of what we're going to talk about this morning to kind of reflect, I guess for me personally, but I think a lot of the staff and the board members will bear this out. Over the last 7 years, what we've learned about just life in general and our spiritual formation, I suppose in particular, as we've gone through all of this, as we've experienced these last 7 years in ways that we never thought we would, you got to learn something. And I have three things that I want to talk to you about this morning that we have learned as we've moved through this. And I have them on your bulletins. And I don't know if James is going to get them up there, but it's so important as we go through the things that we go through. Because here's what we do, and here's what we did. We had a vision. We had a project. And we had an outcome in mind of what we wanted to have happen. And so we're motoring along, trying to execute this vision, trying to get the outcome that we want. But all this life is happening at the same time. And things aren't going according to plan. And things are going sideways in different directions. The danger, I suppose, is, the temptation, I suppose, is to just tighten down your blinders. Just try to make all that stuff go away. Like we said last week, whatever, it's like putting your hand over your ears and going, la, 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 la. Don't bother me with the facts. Don't bother me with life. I'm on a mission here from God. You know, don't mess with me. But what is life really about? What is a spiritual journey really about? Is it about your mission? Is it about your outcome? Or is there something else going on that we should be paying attention to that comes in from the sides, from the place where we least expect? That's been my experience, that the most significant things, the most important things of these last 7 years didn't occur along the line of my agenda. It came in from the sides where I wasn't paying attention at first. And I'm trying to pay better attention now. This first point here, this first thing that I've learned, is to pay attention to every moment. When I'm in agenda mode, when I'm looking for a certain outcome, then all my moments need to line up, you know? Kind of like iron filings, when you put a magnet, they all line up. Everything, all my moments had to line up to get to where I wanted to go. And when I do that, I'm missing all these other moments. Let me give you the case in point. Here I am at that music store buying stuff from Grendel, and he asked me to come and listen to him play. I told you I have no idea why I said yes. But as I look back now from a vantage point of, what, 10, 11 years, that moment, that yes, that was so arbitrary, so, you know, insignificant at the time, has become a hinge point in my entire life. I look back, my life is going this way, that, yes, I'll come hear you play, Grendel, even though you might suck, I'll come hear you play. Left turn at Albuquerque. Everything right turn at Albuquerque. How about that's better, right? It's a hinge in my life. I have no idea why I said yes. And I'm not going to try to over-spiritualize it like God was talking to me, because you know me to know that I don't think that God really cares what we do. He cares how we do what we do. This is a choice that I made, and I dragged poor Marion along, you know, with me. But it was something that is so significant now to look back on. Can we look at every single moment of our lives with that same significance? Every moment contains a choice. What are you going to choose? And what does that yes, what does that no say about you as an individual in this moment? And what does it do in terms of the choice in the next moment? Because every time we choose, we set up just another moment of circumstances and situations in which we have another choice and another one after that. We look backwards and we see, like stepping stones in the lawn, the line of our past, and we imagine the future is the same way, but it's not. There is no path in the future. There's nothing until we step into it. And when we step into it with a choice. And what is that choice going to be? Do we see the significance of that choice? Maybe saying yes to hear someone play is just saying yes to hear someone play, and there's a cul-de-sac right there and it never goes any further. Or maybe it changes the entire course of your life. You will never know until you continue to live your life. It doesn't matter. Were you present to the choice? Are you willing to say yes to things that you would never say yes to? Because who knows what's going to happen? A new experience opens yourself up to all sorts of people and possibilities, doors that can open that you will never, ever know could have existed in your life if you keep saying no, or only say yes to the things that you are familiar with. Are you willing to say yes to something you're not familiar with? Are you willing to say yes to something that is uncomfortable, that you feel resistance for? That's probably the very thing you need to say yes to. Look at Matthew 13. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed, which a man took and sowed in his field. And this is smaller than all the other seeds, but when it's full grown, it's larger than the garden plants and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and nest in its branches. I love when Jesus says the kingdom of heaven is like. There's a few dozen of those in the New Testament. You could look them up. The kingdom of heaven is like this tiny little choice in this tiny little moment that seems so insignificant and so mundane that you won't even look twice at it as you're looking for the outcome that you're speeding by at 60 miles an hour. Can you stop and see this for what it is? The kingdom of heaven is like that. Paying attention to every moment, being present to every moment, and seeing it for what not only it is, but in certain ways what it could be. Because it doesn't matter what it could be. Seeing it for what it is, being present to it. The second point, this idea of daily rededication. I told you at that first planning meeting, we talked about this. If we really want to be something different than what we see, if we really want to have a ministry that does specific things, then we're going to have to rededicate ourselves daily, every single day, to those principles. We tend to think of things in terms of events and not as much as processes. Salvation is like that, and we've had this debate in here over and over. Is salvation an event or a process? Well, it's sort of both. There's an event, there's a moment that you get on the path, you say yes to God. But if you don't keep saying yes, then do you lose your salvation? Oh, I don't want to go there. You know, I can hear the inner Calvinist starting to scream. Think of it as a marriage. You know, our wedding day. We spend tens of thousands of dollars on the wedding day, and we have this big party and all these things, and the breathless bride and groom are standing there. I've looked into so many of those eyes spinning around in their heads. I don't even think they're aware of what the moment is. They're just... But that contract, that moment... I do, that big moment. And we're going to celebrate those anniversaries on out. If you're not saying I do every single day of your life as a married person, then what does that first day mean? Is day 1,457 any less significant than day one? 40 years out, is that any less significant than day one? We're seeing people getting divorced all over the place. Seeing people getting divorced after 40 years of marriage. Just makes you kind of cock your head like a puppy and say, really? It took you 40 years to figure that out? Every moment, daily rededication. There's that movie, here I go with movie quotes again, but this is so perfect. This movie, Castaway, with Tom Hanks, I don't know if you all seen it. He is a FedEx manager or something, and he's in Moscow trying to get the Russians to run their trucks on time, and he's having an absolute cow panic attack because the truck was 2 minutes late, and he's on this rage, you know. Today the truck was 2 minutes late, tomorrow it's 4 minutes late, and then it's six, and then it's eight, and before you know it, you are the U.S. mail. That little bit, that movement just changes everything. You know? And so if we don't rededicate ourselves to it every single day, we will lose it. We have worked really hard here to rededicate ourselves to the principles that we've established. And to a greater or lesser extent, one of the things that I'm most proud of is that we've managed that. Yeah, we've been all over the place too. You can't help it. Things happen and it moves here and there. But for the most part, we've come back to our principles, come back to the reason for us to exist. And it's kept us small in certain respects, kept us a little funky. One of the things that we started with was the idea of attraction and not promotion. Now realizing we need a little more balance, but it took us 7 years to figure that out. So it's the way things work, you know. But because we have tried, there is still a recognizable effect after 7 years that looks like what it started with. But it takes that rededication. We cannot let it go. You know, otherwise we lose everything. This third point, maybe the biggest. Oh, I forgot to read Joshua, didn't I? Joshua 24. If it is disagreeable in your sight to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves today whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served, which were beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Don't you love that? Whether the gods that were beyond the river, that's beyond the Tigris and the Euphrates, the Hebrews came from Mesopotamia. They came from the gods of Babylon originally. Of course, it was Sumeria and Akkadia and those places then. Are you going to go back to those gods? Or now as we're moving into this land which God has given us, are you going to take with their gods, their pantheon? As for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. Caught between those places, caught between daily rededication, we will slide off into all sorts of places unless each day we just get up and say, as for me and my house, this is what we're going to do. This is who we're serving, and this is how we're serving. It has to happen. Then moving into this acceptance of powerlessness. It's, of course, the first step of the 12 steps of AA to admit that you're powerless. But it takes on a new kind of meaning when placed into this community setting. And I think the idea here for me is that we want our story to be controlled. We want our project to have an outcome that we're looking for. But you can't do it. Life cannot be controlled. Life cannot even be resolved. Life doesn't resolve. We want it to resolve. We want it to come to this neat conclusion. We want to have it all tied up in a bow. And it doesn't work that way. Things have happened in these last 7 years that we never anticipated. People have come and gone. The people that I thought would be with us until the end of time are gone. Other people have come in that I never imagined. I mean, if you can imagine, if you had asked me a year ago, the last person I would ever expect in a million years to be part of the effect, Pat Boone was so far off the list, I wouldn't even have put him on the list. How does that happen? How does that happen? Well, it happens when we meet Lindy, and then we meet Mike, and then we get introduced to their family, and Ryan, and Vera, and then all of a sudden we're asking Lindy to speak before us, and her mom and dad come. How do you control that? How do you engineer that? How do you make that happen? Well, the answer is that you don't. Stuff happens in the transit. Stuff happens in the process that you cannot control. This is a beautiful thing, but there have been other things. I still miss Jeff Jones. I miss him every single day. I think about him and he just comes to mind. And of those of you who don't know his story, one of our founders, that guy walking around with that vision, about 2.5 years into this experiment, he relapsed. He had 9 years of sobriety. We ordained him in the first year here as one of our recovery pastors. In no way did I ever in a million years expect that I would be doing this without Jeff. I never wanted to do this without Jeff. Jeff was the reason I'm sitting here. He brought something to our group that really hasn't been replaced in a very real way. But he relapsed, and he relapsed bad. And it cost him his marriage, and we had to set him down for a year, and we kept trying to bring him back at various times over the next 2 to 3 years, and there was still too much tension between him and Lisa. There was always some reason why not. And then he relapsed again, and it cost him his life last July. Almost been a year. Talk about things that you can't control. Talk about things that you can't even imagine happening. For good or for ill, life is what it is. It can't be controlled. And you know what? It's not supposed to be. The beauty of life is the fact that it's wild. The beauty of life is that it can't be tamed. The beauty of life is that it won't sit still under your microscope. It's always going to squeeze out someplace or another. If we can't learn to enjoy the fact that we can't control life, we will never enjoy the moments of our lives. We will always, always be frustrated. We will always feel like a victim. We'll always be raging at the universe and God, why did this have to happen? Instead of realizing, that's the beauty. How bored would we be if we knew exactly what was going to happen? How limited would we be if all we could conceive is all we ever got? There is so much more that we can't even begin to imagine if we will just allow ourselves to move with the rhythms of life, blow with God's Spirit. These are the things that I've learned. And everything points in the same direction. James 4:13. Come now, you who say today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city and spend a year there and engage in business and make a profit. Yet you don't know what your life will be like tomorrow. You're just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. But as it is, you boast in your arrogance, and such boasting is evil. It misses the point. It takes us away from the absolute presence that we could have with each moment of life. And each one of these three points to presence. Attention to every moment is the awareness that brings us presence in the moment. Daily rededication is the perseverance, the faith that brings us presence in the course of our life. And the acceptance of powerlessness is the vulnerability that allows us to be completely open and present to everyone and everything in our path. It comes down to presence. But there are ways that we experience that presence. There are ways that bring us to that presence. And the scriptures are telling us, and life is telling us, and our friends are telling us, and the suffering and the horrible things that are happening are telling us, if only we're willing to listen. When the student is ready, the teacher appears in all of these different forms. If we're not willing to see truth where it appears, and not only where we expect it to be, we're dead. We're not going to learn. I wanted to end with a reading of a journal entry that I wrote. And it struck me because I'm finishing up the edit, after all this time, of The Fifth Way, the book that I wrote. And as I was going through it, I hit this journal entry, which is the way the book ends. And it just so happens that the date on the journal entry is Sunday, May 22nd, 1994, at 6:20 a.m. That's 4 days from being exactly 20 years, as we're 2 days from being exactly 7 years. And this journal entry was celebrating or acknowledging the 2-month anniversary of my marriage to Marion. 2 months, 60 days. All of these things connected. And I'm just going to read this to you. As you're thinking about those 3 points, see if it comes together for you. Sunday, May 22nd, 1994, at 6:20 a.m. 2 months. Happy 60th anniversary. Happy 60-day anniversary. From the great perspective of 2 months, I can't help wondering how many anniversaries there will be and how long before I can balance all the pieces of my new life. Life has begun again. Life is 2 months old. Life will never be the same again and again. Almost ready to turn off the desk lamp. Last brave little star fighting to be seen through the lightning blue between upper branches. Cold morning. Cold dark apartment. Very quiet. Little girl's asleep in the other room. Just like the first entry here with you asleep. Not 41 days old, but 7 years. A person. You are who you are. I know who that is. You'll reinforce it from here, modify it, but not fundamentally change. This is a good thing. You're a good person. The little star is gone now. Had to give up the fight against the big star coming up the other side of the sky, just starting to color the treetops. Light off. Cool blue cast over the pages now. So warm knowing you're here with me, sleeping peacefully, trusting me supremely to keep you safe, allowing yourself through me to be a child, to defer growing up for a while longer because you can. 6:45, time to shower, time to shave, time to wake you as slowly and gently as possible, time for stretching and dressing and donuts on the drive to church, time for the noise to begin. The day to rise up, roll over us, grow old, fade to evening, to give us just enough time to gather enough strength to get up and watch the little star lose its fight once more in the coming glare. And just now, in my silence, looking for next words, feeling the weight of the emptiness of not knowing exactly what to say, feeling myself at the end of myself, with nothing else to offer this page or anyone else. I hear soft footsteps, bare footsteps in the carpet behind me, and I turn to you, stumbling toward me, eyes half closed, arms out. I gather you into my lap, warm, smooth, hold tight, whisper in your ear. Groggy whispers back. Don't you see? This is life. I hold it in my arms. Precious, fleeting, unpredictable, untenable. It comes unbidden, stays as long as it desires, changes form without notice. When we think it's over, when we think there is nothing left, soft footsteps come up from behind and flow warmly into our laps and breathe new words into empty pens, new thoughts into empty minds, new fire into cold hearts. The little star is not lost. It's still there, burning with the intensity of 1,000 suns. It simply gave way for a time, a short time, to let us have day, warmth, variety, life. But it is still right there between the branches, between someone branches as this ball turns. You are like this, Lord, burning brightly beyond the light blue veil, giving way to our daylight for a time while we live. I keep forgetting that you are here, that the veil is much closer than the sky, that I am not all there is, that when I am over, your soft footsteps will come and bring new life and words. If only I will pull you into my lap and hold you as though my life depended on it. Oh my God, my Lord, my life, thank you. Thank you for the tears on my cheeks. Thank you for my little girl sleeping again in my lap. For the littler one in the next room and my bigger one away in the mountains, thank you for this cold, clear morning, for the doves sitting in the top branches of the lightning trees. Thank you for my pen. Thank you for reminding me of my life. You are the unexpected, Lord. You are the ultimate surprise that keeps us guessing, interested, and alive. Let's pray. Father, thank you for the years. Thank you for the time. Help us to flow with whatever is next. Help us to see you in every detail, in every person, in every child, and every addict, every person that we encounter, and everyone that we can help. Help us to hold lightly to our plans and our outcomes and our agendas. Help us to change form without notice, along with the movement of your Spirit. And help us to find you along every step of our way. We want to enjoy the ride, Father. Help us to let go of anything that would keep us from enjoying the ride with you. That's the outcome we're after. To smile and to laugh and to bring vivid memories away from every moment that prove that we were there. We were really there. That's what we're after. Thank you, Father, for everything. Thank you for loving us the way that you do. Keep us on track with undiverted hearts. In Jesus' name, amen. Let's stand.